The Liar contacts of Professor Hernandez in the 70s, then continues upreading on audiophile part 3 here, and so the following rest part of the book, though then made by Ivona Reader, and text to follow on www.galactic.no/rune/liar1.html. From Chapter 8. Prophecies. You said you had same prophecies for me. You like prophecies?
Yes.
That is a characteristic of the people of your particular planet. They desire to hear things of the future, such as an advice of good fortune. This desire is programmed in your mind because the human being, before, earlier, used to be able to see farther into the future than present man. A continuation of this, I can tell you, can be accomplished only by retaining the equilibrium of mutual affection and assistance. What are you trying to say? That only in case you do not destroy yourselves completely, can you learn. How? I asked, not understanding. Look, in your year 2015 you will be unable to obtain energy from sound. Sound could bring you energy of a power unsuspected, but only of tuned vibrational sound. It must be a vibration like the chord of a violin or a guitar, or a flute or a pipe. Vibrational music can accomplish marvelous things. In our world, music is revealed as a treasure for the energization of whatever specimen of energy is around. Beings from other worlds come to Enkstria to observe the vibrational changes of sound and their extent. But there is something that you would not imagine. The energy of sound serves to preserve bodies or cadavers. Sound also can always be used to control the climate when it is executed sufficiently fine, and in one vibratory wave so as not to provoke error. It also helps to heat an habitation without irritating the inhabitants. This same can be an invincible weapon, because sound in a note sufficiently high and sharp can provoke earthquakes. How interesting! I responded. On the proposition of earthquakes, what is the cause of those? Have you found the solution in the movements of Earth? When the Earth opened and formed the continents, dispersing them and creating what you call errant poles, and which for us is a loss of energy, the components of the Earth also were implicated in the equilibrium of metals, mercury, iron, uranium, petroleum, etc., in the same manner as minerals in the human organism. When these are dispersed, the Earth loses absorbency of that natural energy. Some planets have discovered a quite simple formula for avoiding great disasters and unnecessary loss of life. Enormous needles of determined thickness, whose components are all the minerals known to you plus oxygen, hydrogen, ryoseno, SiC, as well as copper, which is a good conductor, and a substance that has its origin in the liberation of energy in the friction of minerals, and what you yourselves do not know and what we called Xuin, were used to neutralize the seismic activity. If you neutralize this, you eliminate the movement. Some inhabitants of other planets of the galaxy from which they come, have discovered a very simple formula for avoiding great disasters and unnecessary casualties. Enormous movements of rock and floods cause changes in riverbeds in many countries. The manner in which they implant the above-mentioned needles attracts precisely the energy from the minerals in question, and its liberation is minor. The needles of determined thickness and whose components are described above, attract the energy that liberates the Earth a little before the earthquake and transforms it into some form utilizable, with the double purpose of reducing or minimizing the seismic activity and to condense a high quantity of the energy. The waves are collected with the same system of attraction and absorption through the needles disposed strategically in highly telluric, sick, places. Some other planets have a system of congealing the Earth that is highly seismic to reduce its potential to a minimum of 5% to zero through a system of absorption of energy. The congealed Earth does not experience too much movement, at least that which suffers a sudden change of temperature. On other planets where the radiating star is deficient, they artificially create clouds which provoke neutralizing rays in the seismic zones, dosifying them gradually. I looked at her fixedly and asked, "How many planets do you know?" "I have lost count, but I can tell you that it is more than, well, let us say 3,000 to 4,000 investigated by the group or in the laboratories of Enkstria. By this time there must be more, many more than that. At what basic velocity do you travel? That depends on the energy of each ship. Ours can achieve something like 300,000 of your kilometers per hour or more. That is too much, don't you think? Other civilizations travel much faster. Do you like that work? She looked at me greatly surprised. Work? On our planet we are conditioned to investigate through the knowledge of the stars, and our greatest love is for knowledge. The watchword, to know. Our minds are endowed with receptivity for knowledge, and that is really the destiny of our community. Through knowledge they obtain innumerable advances. Have you studied our system? Yes, when your solar system was relatively new for us, we saw and counted 16 planets, but we supposed that you might have more, taking into account that one average star comes to retain in its orbit more or less 32 planets, of which only the first 10 to 12 receive in accordance with their orbital phase, energy from the star, sufficient to surround said body, through its own energy guide. What is the energy guide? The energy that the star emits to drive its planets. I don't understand. You will understand when I tell you that energy attracts energy for its same characteristics, in the manner that as the sun emits its heat in one refractory step, it is returned to the same star, a kind of interchange that at length serves to guide the planets. The sun possesses a strong attraction for the planets, without which these would not derive their motion. Does our world resist the assaults of solar changes? If the solar energy diminishes or increases, your world would truly resist it. The rotation and the density of energy are important factors for a planet. The temperature and the pressure determine the lapse of its existence. If these are altered, it changes the life on the planet in question. Did you know our planet before it was populated? When your world was conceived, it already had cycles of arc by the hundreds, remaining in its orbit, but nevertheless at a certain time of yours, to this date we have been your cosmic connection. Your ancestors knew perfectly well our existence. Some lived in superior civilizations through a conception by means of a clone. Why? I already explained to you that the Hindu was a folk that established itself on Earth in the beginnings of life, as we know it, on the planet. Those who reached an optimum level of consciousness were extracted. Did the ancient folk know about the atom? Of Rohavd S60, yes, they had taken precautions not to use it arbitrarily. Nevertheless there were people who used it indiscriminately, like in your society today. Put your hand on the ultrasensor and you can see, if you like, the arsenals of any of the powers of the world. I placed my hand and effectively saw, with stupefaction, the deposits of thermonuclear weapons. Those are the so-called Agives, Liar said to me. If you condensed all of that energy and extracted only one drop of it, you could place in march the engine of one airplane for 100 years without it descending to land. But you have controlled the atom arbitrarily and indiscriminately so much that it is no wonder to the community of advanced civilizations that man will terminate his days at the mercy of an error. You possess an atomic neutralizer, isn't that correct? Yes, but I know what you are thinking. You know that we are prohibited using it against the weapons of the societies. You have seen that we neutralized atomic collisions in the sea to save the maritime flora and fauna. But this cannot always be done. We do this out of respect for life, but not to steal the accumulation of energy that you possess. That is a respected point, which the major advanced civilizations guarantee to all societies and to all planets, always and when they do not spill innocent blood, because that also implies a fallback to the beginning of the stellar community. But you asked me if the ancient societies knew how to use the atom, didn't you? Yes. I responded. Very well, the pyramids do not present a simple view, what they really are and why they were really constructed. Those form an equilateral rhomboid. The rhombus divides the rhomboid in the middle at ground level and the other half is underground. Many things are connected to beings from other star groups. Do you know why? Because this may show that on other planets also exists the knowledge of the accumulation of energy. The knowledge set down in one pyramidal body will show you the track or the trajectory through which pass persons of other planets disseminating the knowledge. The form of each one of them will come to show the advance of their knowledges and the line of the lineage of your civilization. For this you see different pyramidal constructions the length of your planet. In our last meeting you spoke to me about terrestrial regions in which you still detect residues of the principle of the vortice. What is that? The force in the movement of the vortice can be compared to that of cyclones, hurricanes, tornadoes, etc., though the origin is much more complicated than it seems in these atmospheric manifestations, which have only a slight speed compared to the magnetic vortice. A vortice is born in a form similar to a drain tube, and it is named for this primitive form. The whirlpools in the sea show us that they are not only detected in the air but in the seas also. What happens is that the vortice can form in the flux of certain minerals in the earth as well as in the water. Many years ago, the civilizations that preceded the Great Holocaust controlled these forces irresponsibly through the concentration of stores of this energy that accumulated. Imagine guarding in storage the force of some 10, 20 or 30 hurricanes. Man discovered that he could do great things with this, from provoking rain where precipitation was not frequent to places where his enemies had stored things susceptible to loss as a consequence of a cyclone. Today also exist forms of attracting rains. This is only a beginning. Well then, the force of this vortice would be sufficient to divide a city in two or to submerge a village of fishermen. This was never foreseen in your eagerness to accumulate more and more classes of energy. There are places where still can be found generators of this force that can destroy all that is around it. All energy moves through a constant reabsorber and reunites. Energy also reproduces itself if it is not extracted from its original field, but if the accumulation in an apparently secure place surpasses the level PF containment, it will struggle to get out. Oxygen and hydrogen are energy, but only two of the many types of energy that there are. Many forms of energy in space are counterproductive to the atmosphere of your planet, and could produce an explosion of incalculable reach. Every movement of wind helps to increase the friction of the waves. The blow of wind is not material to that which accelerates its rotation. Each energy has its own characteristics. Well then, the greater energy always will be in the vortex, in pyramidal form, and observe that the majority of the more resistant constructions left to posterity by your ancestors has this form. Who would imagine storing energy in a vortex inside of the pyramidal vortex? They discovered accidentally that only a storage container with that form could retain, without serious consequences, the energy of the vortex. Then is the stereotype of the atom like energy? The atom is energy, you are energy, and all the animals of your world are energy. Energy always will take the form of the vortex. From Chapter 9, Prophecy Fulfilled. One of the more important prophecies that Lyra revealed to me seemed to me to be more than a prediction, a warning. My life had been slipping from surprise to surprise since I had come to know her. She had made me feel a fortunate human being, and consequently, through her discussions, had awakened in me a feeling of knowledge of such dimensions that I had come to believe that Lyra possessed much more of divinity than of woman. On other occasions she had offered me proofs by predicting political results which in their time occurred as predicted. The death of Anwar Sadat, the attempted assassination of the President of the United States, of Ronald Reagan, the death of Brezhnev 1 year before the event, and the premature death of Andropov, as well as the attempted assassination suffered by the Pope, plus catastrophic floods, heavy snows, and severe earthquakes, were all predicted with surprising accuracy. 1. Over a lapse of 5 years Lyra had predicted political events that came to pass exactly as she said. For such, when she spoke of a future imminent danger for humanity, when I still could not imagine what it would be, I was afraid that it was something really serious. We will be in the province, a few kilometers from the field. We will meet there, she told me days before our meeting. It was obvious that after having listened for more or less 10 years to Lyra, I had come to know much of her. But also I had learned too much about my own world. She, surprisingly, induced me to see all of those events as an observer, without involving myself, not even emotionally, in what happened. Now something was occurring within me. I felt depressed and experienced an expectant anxiety. I noticed in her words a certain formality unusual for her. I knew, and later had the opportunity to verify, that when something strange occurred in the life of anyone leaving consequences, I would imagine from the moment that it began I believed in Lia and her teachings, which apart from her the happenings would stir up a torrent of surprise. We met 1 month of May, by a village near Michokin. That Thursday I arrived with noticeable anticipation. I was convinced that Lia would take priority in my life and she knew it. Michoacán is located on the central occidental part of the Mexican Republic, on the Pacific Ocean's shore. I experienced a certain agitation inside of me. What was that she had told me? Why had she made this appointment in such a strange and isolated place? While I arrived I had walked around the place a little. The sun shone splendidly and the air was saturated with aromas emanated by fruit trees planted around the small white cottages distributed one by one along the side of the road there. The oxygen that I breathed seemed to nurture my spirit. Suddenly she arrived. She was in front of me with that fresh smile and all of the beauty that simply illuminated her. Completely. She was attired in her black pantsuit with the light blue buttons, seeming like an image drawn from a science fiction movie. I took out my cigarette case and selected one, lit it, and inhaled the smoke profoundly. I felt indecisive, anxious to know that which she would tell me and fearful at the same time about what she might say. I was afraid also that those days were the last of our friendship. And also I felt that my days were slowly caning to an end. All passes, all transpires, all flows in the existence of man. Lia now not only was my friend, my advisor, my informer, but had found such submergence in my life that to extract her, pull her out, leave off seeing her, was going to provoke a trauma in me. The one moment that scarcely stretched to perceive the face of her was overshadowed upon seeing a splendid butterfly that happily flew by next to us. Days before this she had countenanced to me that they would be carrying out labors of a social type in a place near Morelia. She took me by the hand. It was an enduring sensation that had made me feel like a colleague. Lia had the particularity of living in my memory even when her absences were prolonged. Upon contact with her hand my anxieties went up in smoke, completely. "Do not fear. I know that you think that we may not come back together to see each other, but there still will be more occasions. Depending on many things, but fundamentally on our investigations." She had let go of my hand and we were walking slowly. She inserted her hands in the lateral pockets of her jacket and I continued smoking. "Lia," I said suddenly, breaking the silence. "You met me here for something which supposedly is very important, isn't that so?" She turned on her heels and looking at me face to face said, "Yes, Professor. You have been an inestimable friend during much time of your cycle, though for me seeing each other and talking has been relatively very little. I have enjoyed very beautiful instances at your side, and I learned. I admired you for your existential vibrations, and that terrestrials also know how to love intensely. We know those changes of conduct that have operated in you for one cycle of arc or another, 3, and I can assure you that is for which your race is experiencing a change, imperceptible to you, not only at an organic level, but genetically. Besides reasonably and habitually. They move within boisterous confusion, like I said to you, and in continual nidification. Your mode of life, dress, your studies, your work, your form of love, of being, to exist and to fight, are changing in conformance with those same events as is required. I can tell you that man himself will allow himself to be carried by the current of a river whose speed is dizzying. Man could change the process of his life, but he feels impotent to do it, and moreover to even try. Today men of your world explore the past to find traces of solutions, to feel through that the reality of a world or epoch before, which he could compare with his present civilization. Lia," I intervened, "in my world a very important scientific change has taken place in these last years. During the length of our friendship you have told me of really surprising things. I have learned more about life than I have known during the whole time of my existence before. You have spoken of your world. To me this is inspirational. But I fear that you are seeing some negative aspects of the planet Earth. I would like to ask you. Is it perhaps that there would be still more and greater dangers awaiting humanity? Is it that it is not enough that man has reached a certain grade of bestial violence for which the life on this planet still will see itself in greater dangers? Why then live, if the existence does not offer any security to man? It is not the life, Professor. It is man himself who has not known the cause of his destiny, political, social and economical. She lowered her gaze, and then she looked at me and I saw a strange shine of resigned worry in her eyes. She touched her ring on her right hand, precisely on her index finger. We continued walking. The occasion began to collapse. The evening set in an orange color, at the time when the earth discharges the incomparable smell of dried mud. Professor, she said, breaking the silence in which we both were submerged. Look at how the sun sinks slowly in the west. You feel upon seeing that a certain indifference because you know with the certainty that it will return one time after another passing itself over the horizon. It will continue its path around the galaxy, toward the constellation that you call Hercules, but always dragging in its orbit the planets attracted to it by its powerful force of gravity. Life is not the same. Each day that passes will not return. You know, in determined moments of your life that you can squander days of your indolent childhood, that you can profit by certain months of your youth trying to use them in study. But then, when you approach maturity, decrepitude, when by the inertia of that which you call time, the body deteriorates, you know that each hour, that every minute that transpires will not return, and you then avoid the loss of one single instant. You have knowledge of the danger to which your world has been exposed through the atomic generation in its wide spectrum, but you and the men of Earth ignore the fact that you still must confront greater dangers that proceed from exterior space. 4. Notes 1. This strange ability of the ETs to foresee events having some bearing on the course of human affairs has been reported many times all over the world by many different people completely out of touch with each other. It appears that events may somehow be connected in time, and that this flow of events may be tapped into at some level. In the Swiss case of Eduard Meyer's contacts with human beings from a planet in the star group we call the Pleiades, those ETs also forecast events of the future with great accuracy. They predicted the Chinese invasion of North Vietnam, the time and nature of death of Marshal Tito of III Yugoslavia, the completely unexpected abdication of Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, the death of Generalissimo Franco of Spain, the overthrow of the Shah of Iran, the death of President Sadat of Egypt at the hands of his own troops, the assassination also of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi of India by her palace guards and the naming of her son to succeed her, an unlikely prospect at the time, the death by poisoning of a pope after only 33 days in office, and many more such things sometimes years before they happened. In fact, those ETs measured the progress of humanity in terms of what they called event time as opposed to clock time or calendar time, which they did not use. They said that there are confluences in time that change the course of affairs of many people and that these are what are important to man. 2. It is apparent that Lyra has other contacts going on at this same time with which she is also occupied, whereas Professor Hernandez has only this one contact with such an exotic person. 3. The ET woman spoke of cycles of Arca's time, which may not have always meant fixed time as we know it. IB view time differently from us of Earth. 4. It is difficult to convince ourselves of greater dangers coming from the depths of space when we do not even allow that other intelligent living creatures smarter than us, or evolved beyond us, could exist. We must first become aware that our ego-centered universe is not the true perspective of things. From Chapter 10, Extraterrestrial Danger. One time I told you, Lyra said, that your world will not find itself prepared socially, nor economically, nor emotionally to confront the changes. Yes, I said, remembering that occasion in which we profoundly analyzed the personality of a human being. Lyra had explained to me in detail the special characteristics of the Earth humans. Remember, she said, that speaking of the different characters demonstrated by one living being, I told you of other civilizations. You had asked me if there were beings more aggressive than the Earth humans inhabiting this universe. I mentioned that there was and spoke about those who have been coming on various occasions to your world. Yes, I remember that you told me that there exist races that are dedicated to the domination of others without regard for the means by which they accomplish this. I thought pensively about what I wanted to say. Then Lia, I asked you if those races were a danger to us, and you told me that later, when you would be more sure, you would answer that. Yes, Professor, and now, not only I, but my community as well are sure that these races are lying in wait and studying your humanity, and they represent a real threat to you. 1. In what form? In that they scorn mercy to your empiricism and the rickety form of science that you possess. They have been caning to your world with complete freedom and have captured living beings, children, ancients, men, women, animals, fish, and they rob you of oxygen, hydrogen, and even absorb electric fluid of the supplies flowing to your great cities. Humans who, unfortunately, disappear and do not return anymore have been kidnapped by them. Clearly, not all those who are lost have been carried away by that race, but they have carried out innumerable captures. Do they also take specimens in danger of extinction, to implant races or to extract their DNA and clone all of the organism for later implantation or to create new creatures, and also with human beings they have achieved these implants. They have placed in danger a number of times the peace of Earth. And only that? I asked somewhat relieved, thinking that the problem was originating in the mind of Lia. No, not only that. In earlier years, this race, classified in our archives as Zums, had been coming to your world where they studied the ionosphere, the stratosphere, the atmosphere, the grades and densities of the gases existing in the air, but above all they had placed in practice discoveries that at times have been harmful to the planet, in an attempt to dominate the planet slowly and silently. Will they come to attack us? I asked. Their gift to the Earth is not peacefulness. Over 6,000 years ago they came to the Earth for the first time. Their elevated stature soon made it appear that they were above the terrestrials, but their knowledge surprised them in such a manner that they submitted completely to those beings. In that time they violated the women and took several thousands of human beings for their service. 3. Nevertheless they had not demonstrated a power superior to the terrestrials, speaking of those men of your actual civilization. Of the technical capacity that you now possess, they still had the material dematerializing ray and the power of the control of gravity. They possessed flying ships that were a marvel to the beings of Earth. All of the rulers listened to the words of those powerful beings who came from the sky. Profiting from this advantage, they took slaves for themselves, for being treated as gods for that. Today they have become even more superior and are powerful in notable ways. Their Zums lack sentiments and experience no emotion at all. This is because their scientific ancestors achieved, more than 2,000 years ago, the eradication of fear in their minds, for the purpose of which their world would live in optimum individual circumstances. Their Zums nevertheless achieved the eradication of all sentiment. They deprived themselves of love, of friendship, of benevolence, and finally of all sentiments that could obstruct their power. This was programmed for the civilizations that would follow. In your world, emotions of that type predominated. They observed how the hypersensibility of the individual could be used to develop profound hate, and how the absence of love many times induces not only the suicide of one person, but the annihilation of a whole race. They, the Zums, eradicated definitely from their race the conscience and all respect for life. This being the case, the Zums could be, comparatively speaking, the antithesis of your world. They came to Earth a long time ago, and after arriving proceeded to analyze all types of life here. They knew perfectly well the vulnerable points of man and discovered then that man had suffered genetic alterations. After deliberations among themselves, they determined that if the Earth human was, on the other hand, already predestined to disappear at the mercy of his own tendencies, the more appropriate it would be to condition him to serve them, for which they proceeded to appropriate him slowly at his own volitude. They succeeded, according to their own purposes, in making the Earth a pilot planet, or auxiliary, destined for whatever emergency that might arise. They would implant laws in your planet itself that the inhabitants could not discard. Those who resisted would be subjected to simple annihilation.